Harihi Om. Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryankaravavahai, Tejasvinavati Tamastuma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigora Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. John. Okay, so now Arjuna has dispelled the illusions of the Nivada Kavachas. Then they came back with more. They were fighting this, but through his weapons, he was able to find them out, even they were being invisible and all that. So then, the Nivada Kavachas then gave up their illusions and retreated into their city. At once, everything became visible, right? Because before, all the illusions, you couldn't see what was actually happening there. I saw the ground covered with their mangled bodies, their weapons, ornaments, armor, and limbs. It was impossible for the horses even to step. Mutali urged them upwards, and the chariot sprang into the sky, because they couldn't go on the ground, so he just took it into the sky. There were just so many, because remember, tens of thousands came out, so then they would have all been killed. Seeing my foes retreat, I relaxed, but the next moment, the demons invisibly attacked me again. Right? Because just as you think, because that's the thing, is they use what's to their advantage, not necessarily what is dignified. A thick shower of mountain crags rained down upon me. From beneath me, I felt the Danavas grasping hold of the horse's legs and pulling them down. So many rocks were falling that it seemed as if my chariot was in a cave. Again, I was gripped by fear. Seeing this, Mukuli said, "Take heart, Arjuna. Use Indra's thunderbolt weapon. It will destroy these rocks," because he's seen, Indra before. Because the Danavas, the demons, they use the same tactics all the time. Just like in the standard, the celestial warfare, they use the same kind of weapons. But it's who's more expert at it. Just like, let's say, you have boxing. They're using the same techniques, but who's better at it? So the demons, and they use these illusions. It's the same ones. They always use the same stuff. It's not like down from the sky rain showers of, let's say, rasgulas or samosas or something like that. And then and they start eating. No, it's always rocks and, mountaintops and stuff, snakes or, something weird. I chanted the mantras to invoke Indra's weapon while placing iron darts on Deva. Charged with the power of Indra's vajra, the darts sped towards the crags and smashed them to powder. The darts also dispelled the demons' illusions and struck them down from the sky. So it smashed the rocks because they're also that power of illusions. So they can have an effect because it's based on their previous austerities and all that. But it also dispelled the illusion because then they're shot, and then it also killed the person who was sending that illusion. They fell screaming on all sides like huge meteors dropping from the heavens. Many of them fled and entered the bowels of the earth, while others vanished into the sky. Realizing that the demons had been defeated, I told Mutali to drive the chariot into the city. He gazed about the battlefield in amazement and said, "I have never witnessed such prowess, not even from the gods." Right? So Mutali is saying this. And he drives Indra's chariot, so they've been in plenty of battles like that. And all that, he says, he's never seen such, just these illusions where he's lost control. No, they're doing things like that, rocks, but he's never had one where the horses go. And he's never seen such prowess. These demons have until now been impossible to conquer, even by the combined efforts of the gods. Right? Because they have so many of them, so much power, right? That, and they're able, and they use it through their illusions, so it's just greater than the demigods can deal with. Mutali drove the chariot towards the city gates, and I reflected on the battle. Although hundreds of thousands of Danavas, each like a mountain, lay dead, neither Mutali nor myself had been injured, right? Not even a scratch. So that's special. This was wonderful. No doubt it was Krishna's potency alone that had that had protected us and enabled me to defeat the gods' mighty foes, right? Because the only other instance of this that we see is when Krishna came out to fight with Jarasandha. He brought an Akshauhini of soldiers to Mathura, And he would, Krishna would come out with a small little, you know, army. And, you know, just to come out and give the, that presence and that going to battle. And then he would do all the fighting. And at the end, neither him nor his people would have any, you know, any injury at all, not even a scratch. So we see, that's what I think, it's Krishna's power that caused that. Otherwise, there'd be something. Like we saw Bhima's fighting, he got even hit in the arm, you know, by Maniman's mace. And so then, but here's nothing, you know, so he knows this must be Krishna. We entered the Danava city and saw thousands of wailing women. They fell back in fear as we passed, terrified by the chariot's thunderous rattle, right? Because now all their, you know, one is a disturbance, they're living there peacefully, and now this whole battle and all that, so now what will happen, what will be the future, everything. The clash of their jewels and ornaments as they fled resembled the sound of hail falling upon a mountain, right? They had so much jewelry that as they moved, you know, pulling back in fear, it all banging together sound like hail on a mountain, and that so would be a long sound. So that means a lot of women, a lot of ornaments. I saw the ladies quickly disappear into their golden palaces, which were decked with countless gems. Astonished to see the city's opulence, I said to Matali, "This place appears superior to Amaravati. How is it that the gods do not reside here?" Matali replied that the city had once been Indra's residence, but the demons gained possession of it after pleasing Brahma through asceticism, right? So that's where they have to do austerity to get that kind of power. Brahma gave them boons that rendered them invincible to the gods. Indra had then gone to Shiva and asked his assistance, whereupon Shiva replied, "You shall regain the city in the future when you assume a different body." Right? So that different body is Arjuna. Because they can't be defeated by the gods, but in a different form, then they can be. Because you can say, why can't they do it? Because that's the statement. That was the blessing. As Arjuna spoke, his brothers looked at him in amazement. His prowess in battle now exceeded even that of his illustrious father, the Lord of the gods. Right? Because he was able to do something that Indra couldn't do, right? So his brothers are impressed. So now you don't have to worry. The battle of Kurukshetra, that'll just be, it'll unfold how Krishna wants it to make a, you know, a very nice, because it is a Kshatriya thing. It's a Kshatriya scene, and it's something to talk about. Like all these things, then people will remember that and how it happened and all how it unfolded. So because Arjuna himself could defeat everybody. I mean, so if he can defeat the Nivadakavachas that the demigods can, then he could easily defeat everybody. Though, of course, Bhima and Drona are going to be a bit of a problem, but everybody else won't be a problem. Arjuna continued, "I then left the Danava city and headed back towards Amaravati. On the way back, the chariot passed another great city that floated in the sky and shone like a second sun. It was full of trees made of jewels and adorned with golden towers and palaces." The trees are made of jewels, so the body of it will be one thing, the leaves, you know, that'll have that kind of nice color. Then you'll see like crystal in that, then the leaves may be green like emeralds, the flowers or fruits will be like, rubies and, you know, all these things like that, because they are made of gems, but it's just very far out, you get these celestial trees like that. Four impregnable gateways stood on each side of the city. So it had 16 gates all the way around. So it was a very big city. The gateway studded with iridescent gems that radiated countless hues. I've never seen anything like them. And so this is just floated in the sky, this one. Matali told me that this was the city of the Kalakanyas, a class of fierce daityas. It was called Hiranyapura, and even the gods could not conquer it. All right, so here's an opportunity for a second, you know, thing. So he had asked him to defeat the Nivatakavachas, which he did. But now, just by going, just by arrangement, then now he came across this city. Therefore, the demons dwelt there without fear. The Kalakanyas were destined to be killed by a mortal by Brahma's arrangement, right? So here again, you see, is there's always these things that many times are mortal. They can't be defeated by the gods, but they can be defeated by a mortal. But how many mortals have that prowess that they can come and fight with them? Well, there he is. Thus, Matali urged me to rush upon the Daityas and please Indra. I replied, take me there at once. The gods have no enemies whom I do not also consider my enemies. Right? Because if you have alliance with somebody, then their enemies become your enemies. Like if you have a friend, their friend is your friend. Their enemy is your enemy. You know, that's relationship. That's the whole thing is there. So it's based on the relationship. It's not based on these other things. As we approached the city, the demons charged out in a body, thinking that Indra had come to fight because he's on his chariot. Right? And he'll be brilliant like him and everything and sound like that. Without a second's delay, they rained weapons upon me. Arrows, maces, swords, axes, darts, and lances. So you see, there's not even a coming out discussing and, oh, hey, this and that. No, they just immediately start attacking. I countered their attack with mighty volleys of shafts from the Gandiva. Matali drove with such skill that the Danavas were bewildered. And they fell upon one another in their attempts to attack me. Because how he'd moved, then they think he's there, and then they go attack, and there'd be someone else. Realizing I was a formidable enemy, right? So they just throw a lot of stuff and then, you know, get rid of the thing and then, you know, pick up your weapons and go back inside, you know. But now they figure out, no, this is somebody very, very strong. Realizing I was a formidable enemy, the Daityas retreated into their city, which then began to move in all directions. Sometimes it appeared in the sky, then under the ocean, then it disappeared altogether. Then it suddenly reappeared in front of me, shot upwards, and made various curving motions through the air. I'm sure that they have a benediction; they don't get movement sickness. Otherwise, they'd have a real problem, right? You know. Although I found it difficult to follow its movements, I managed to check its progress with straight coursing arrows inspired by mantras. Right, so then, what you can that you can focus on it. Then you have the mantras. Then you release them, and then you can catch. I released so many shafts that the city was torn to pieces and it fell to the ground in flames. The Daityas rose into the sky and continued to fight. Matali then brought us down to earth and more than 50,000 chariots immediately hemmed me in. Right, being an Atirati, I think they can fight with 60 or 70. I fought them with celestial weapons, but the powerful Daityas gradually repelled my missiles. The mighty demons stood before me encased in brilliant golden armor, wearing helmets and celestial garlands, and with chariots decorated with rows of flags. The sight of the Daityas in battle array attracted my mind, and I struggled in vain to overpower them, right? Because they were just so nicely arranged and everything so perfect and how they did. So for one warrior, you know, they will appreciate that prowess of another warrior. That's always a standard thing. At least of those who are more cultured. I was sorely oppressed by their weapons. Sinking in an ocean of the Kalakanyas, I suddenly remember Shiva's weapon. Mustering up my courage, I uttered the mantra sacred to the three-eyed deity. At once there appeared before me a huge personality with three heads, nine eyes, six arms, and hair blazing like fire. His clothes consisted of great serpents whose tongues darted back and forth. I shook off my fear and bowed to that awful form of the eternal Shiva. Then I fixed on my bow, the Rudra Astra, and continuously chanting the mantras, I released it to destroy the Daityas. Thousands of diversely shaped missiles spread out across the battlefield as the weapon was fired. Some resembled lions, some tigers, and others bears and buffalo. It means as he shoots the weapon, it turns into all these things because Shiva, he's the lord of destruction. So then how are all these going to be destroyed? That's one thing, it's just an arrow is shooting at you. It's another thing if there's a lion charging at you. And not only that, it's your own personal lion. It's not like one lion and a whole bunch of them. Each Daitya gets his own lion or tiger or bear or whatever it is that's rushing at him. There were serpent-shaped missiles and others shaped like elephants, bulls, boars, and cats. You know, and I'm sure it's not just pleasant little putty cats, you know, I mean, these are, you know, scratch your eye out cats, you know. Simultaneously, the battlefield filled up with Shiva's followers, innumerable guhyakas, yakshas, paisachas, bhutas, and other ghostly things. All of them rushed towards the Daityas with frightening roars, right? So that's why you have to have such prowess and power to be able to wield these weapons, because Shiva, his position, he's you know, Deva Deva. He's the demigod of the demigods. And so then, to be able to use his weapon, you have to be on that same kind of platform. So we can see what a special personality Arjuna is. As the Rudrastra wrought havoc among the enemy, I fired a ceaseless shower of arrows glaring like fire and made of the essence of rocks. So they're going in there, but it doesn't mean he just sits back and, you know, twiddles his thumb and, gets out a drink, you know, drinks that. And no, he doesn't do that. He then starts himself fighting. So the Astra is doing his fighting. He's doing his fighting. The Daityas were routed, and the few that survived fled in fear. Seeing that my victory was due only to Shiva's weapon, I bowed down to him right on the battlefield. Right? So it was because otherwise he was fighting before, but he couldn't hold them back. But with Shiva's weapon, and then combined with using whatever else he had, then he was able. So he saw. So right there he bowed to him at the spot, not just say, yeah, I did a great job. Muttley praised me, and we then returned to Indra's abode. When Indra heard of my achievement, he was pleased and blessed me that I always remained cool-headed in battle. Right? Because to be able to think exactly what can be done and see everything and like that, that's very, very important. So to get such a blessing, that's invaluable. And would always discharge my weapons unerringly, so they would be exact. Where he aims them, that's where he goes. So he sees there, they go there. And he has the cool-headedness to see, I fire here, I claw this, this one says this, I do that. You know, just that's a warrior. He also said that no celestial fighters, whether Danavas, Daityas, Nagas, Gandharvas, Suparnas, or Yakshas, would be able to overcome me. He told me that I would conquer the earth and hand it to Yudhishthira, right? Because that's his, he wouldn't try to take it himself. He's just there to serve. He gave me this impenetrable armor I now wear and fixed this coronet upon my head. He also presented me with a Devadatta. Then he brought me back to this mountain. As Arjuna ended his narration, Yudhishthira was awestruck. He said, O Dhananjaya, it is fortunate indeed that you have met the most powerful gods and received from them all the divine weapons. I consider the earth already conquered and Dhritarashtra's sons subdued. O Bharata, I should like to see the weapons with which you defeated the demons. Arjuna ascended to his elder brother's request and prepared to display the weapons. With the earth as his chariot, the Pandava stood holding Gandiva and recalled the mantras to invoke the various missiles. In his celestial armor and diadem, he faced east and silently concentrated his mind on the prayers. Just as he was about to exhibit the weapons, the earth trembled and the mountain seemed ready to split. The sun was covered and the wind ceased to blow. Brahmins found themselves unable to recite the Vedas, and all creatures felt oppressed. Suddenly the Pandavas saw in the sky the powerful four-headed Brahma surrounded by all the gods. The Gandharvas and Apsaras also appeared, dancing and singing on the mountainsides. A shower of flowers fell upon Arjuna as he looked about in amazement. Before him appeared the divine sage Narada, sent by the gods. Right, so they're all there, and that, and the showers of flowers and that, but they sent Narada down to speak to him. Narada said, O Hiru, do not discharge the celestial weapons for no purpose, for they will destroy the three worlds. They have to do something. So if there's nothing there, then they'll destroy everything. These weapons should only be used against powerful foes in battle. Do not be so rash. Right, because he's just showing his brothers. Narada turned to Yudhishthira. Oh, Ajatasatru, you will see all the weapons when Arjuna uses them in the war against the Kauravas. You know, then you'll see them. Brothers bowed to Narada, and he departed along with all the gods. So, ended. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.